This show furnished by Girardi Keys.
Hello, I'm Dave Dino, and this is Champions of Justice.
We are the champions, my friend.
This is the program that takes you behind the scenes with those who make the laws and those who protect your rights through the rule of law. Your hosts are attorney Thomas Girardi and attorney James O'Callaghan. Tom Girardi is the founding partner of the law firm of Girardi & Keys, known for passionate litigation of corporate giants on behalf of aggrieved individuals. He is a member of the California State Bar Trial Lawyer Hall of Fame and is widely regarded by his peers as one of the nation's top trial lawyers. Jim O'Callaghan is a member of Girardi & Keys, who has tried over 30 jury trials in both state and federal court, and since 1995 has served as an arbitrator and mediator for the Los Angeles County Court's Alternate Dispute Panel. Tom and Jim are champions of justice for the little guy. Each week we bring you this informative and entertaining hour, bringing clarity to the headline-generating legal challenges of the day, and we're going to talk about legal challenges today, because our guest is author and attorney James D. Zirin. James Zirin is a leading litigator who has appeared in federal and state courts around the nation. He is the author of the acclaimed book, The Mother Court, about some of the great cases tried in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York. His newest book is Supremely Partisan. And here Mr. Zirin presents a fascinating analysis of how a deeply partisan Supreme Court imperils equal justice under the law. Some of the highlights of the book: he examines whether or not the Supreme Court of the United States has become a political court, making policy judgments based on sources outside the Constitution. He argues that identity politics has become the overwhelmingly decisive factor in the appointment process. He discusses the evolution of the Catholic, Jewish, and African American seats on the court. He offers an explanation of the Supreme Court's original and intended purpose and how it may have veered off that course. And he engages with the politically charged court cases surrounding issues like religion, abortion, race, LGBT issues, and more. So our topic on the table today is the Supreme Court, its purpose, its history, its makeup, its future. Tom?
Hi, everybody. Hey, thanks for joining us. It's very nice for you to spend a little bit of time, especially with topics like this. Okay, Dave Dino, we went to the bullpen. We said we need a smart guy for this show. We've had a bunch of not too smart guys, but we went, this is it. So Jim O'Callaghan and I heard James speak the other day, and how extraordinary, you know, the insight and so forth of something that is so important, not just to lawyers, but so important to all of us who live here. And it's really a pleasure to have this wonderful scholar, this great writer, this terrific lawyer, be with us today. And a matter of fact, his book here, Supremely Partisan, I want to put a plug in for it because I've gotten through half of it, and it's a truly extraordinary. It's available. Jim?
Yes. Which Jim? I'm the one from the bullpen. I'm the left-hander.
Yes, right. Hey, great to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Here's one question. How did you get this way? We all went to law school, and we sat there in constitutional law and learned the course, et cetera. But I don't think any of us have stepped back like you have to say, gee whiz, let's look at this. You know, it's very interesting, the political aspect of the Supreme Court. In theory, the Supreme Court should be totally without politics. It should just be, we're going to call the balls and strikes. But it is interesting the way things have evolved, huh?
Yes, and I became struck somewhere along the line with first the composition of the court, which when Scalia was around consisted of six Catholics and three Jews, three women, and one African-American, 100% minority, 112 justices, 89 of whom had been white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And they were the wonderful people who gave us Brown v. Board of Education and the various liberal decisions of the Warren Court era, although William Brennan was on that court and he was a devout Catholic. And I also became struck with what has happened perhaps in the last decade, the number of decisions in the Roberts Court, which were 5-4, or perhaps 6-3, a deeply divided, deeply polarized court. Now, what does that signify? It signifies that the court was deeply divided the same way the country has been deeply divided, as we saw in the last election. And Congress is deeply divided, as we know, and indeed our media and our think tanks are deeply divided. So the court is doing nothing more than reflecting the political attitudes of the country. Now, in these deep divides, in certain types of issues, of course, it doesn't apply to all issues, but I like to say it applies to guns, gays, and God, and also abortion. There are conservatives and liberals. Now, we could spend all of our time debating what is a conservative and what is a liberal, but it seems to be that more than coincidence that all those we call conservatives were appointed by Republican presidents, and all those we call liberals were appointed by Democratic presidents. They tend to divide on ideological issues in accordance with preferred policy preferences. Now, I don't argue for a moment that Ruth Bader Ginsburg asks herself before she writes an opinion, what would Bill Clinton want me to write here? She's clearly independent of that, but she was put on the court, as were the conservatives, because they have certain preferred policy preferences known to the appointing authority, particularly on some of the major issues of the day where we're divided, notably contraception, abortion, and gay rights.
You know, this didn't start, though, the past 5 or 10 years. This goes all the way back. This has been a political process. I remember, I think, in law school, FDR trying to load up the court and things like that, right?
Yes. Well, it's, in many ways, it's whose ox is being gored. FDR was faced with the Great Depression. He instituted a number of legislative measures and programs designed to put the country back at its economic health. And you had a conservative Supreme Court that was declaring them all unconstitutional, interestingly, on grounds of freedom of contract and substantive due process, which are some of the bases that the liberals use now to establish new rights under the Constitution. FDR didn't like it, so his solution was to pack the court and to name 6 new justices for each justice over 70 years of age. And he knew what kinds of justices he wanted. The court-packing bill, was dead on arrival in the Senate, even though it was a Democratic Senate. The Senate preserved the independence of the judiciary. And then something dramatic happened. One of the conservative justices became liberal in his voting approaches, and it was called the switch in time that saved 9.
Jim?
You know, James, one of the things that has struck me is that the Supreme Court historically has really been a conservative institution. I look back, and you look back to the Lochner era and even before that, the Dred Scott decision. When we talk about a progressive Supreme Court, we're really talking about a very small window of maybe 10 to 15 years. Isn't that the truth?
Well, I think it goes back to the 1950s, the Warren Court, and where they found new rights in the Constitution, and there were a number of them involving criminal justice, Miranda warnings, and certainly the decision on interracial marriage, others, and then you had the Griswold case, which where they said the government could not ban contraception between married couples. They went on and said they couldn't ban contraception between unmarried couples. And then, of course, you have the abortion decision. But what is so interesting about Roe v. Wade, which is this flexion point that we have politically, that's the abortion decision.
Okay.
And that was in 1973. It was a 7-2 decision and was made possible by the votes of three Nixon-appointed justices, Berger, Powell, and Blackmun. Blackmun wrote the decision. Also made possible by the vote of a Catholic justice, William J. Brennan. Now, Brennan said he was a devout Catholic. He believed that abortion was a mortal sin, but he said he never gave his religion a thought when he cast his vote the way he did, because that was his duty under the Constitution.
What a great idea. In other words, to take your own personal ideas out of things and say, okay, this is what the Constitution really means. Yeah. And then the other thing, you know, the Constitution has to be interpreted. You know, they don't have everything laid out in the Constitution of all these issues. It has to be taking a look at it, and does the Constitution say this or that and so forth?
Yes, and the framers of the Constitution, who were brilliant, brilliant men, many of them slave owners, Madison and Hamilton, principally, who were the architects of the Constitution, believed that the Constitution should speak in areas where they and their colleagues couldn't agree, in majestic generalities, leaving things ambiguous to be decided by future generations and by future courts. And so we have phrases, wonderful phrases like due process of law, and phrases like equal protection of the laws, which came a little later, and or even cruel and unusual punishment. And we have to wrestle with it and try to decide what it means and interpret it in a way that what it means that's meaningful for today's world.
You are listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi, joined today by Jim O'Callaghan, and our guest is James Zirin. He is an author and attorney. We are talking about his book, Supremely Partisan. We're talking about the Supreme Court. I'm Dave Dino, and we'll be back with more in just a moment as you listen to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Napa Know-How. Hey, I'm Chase Elliott, driver of the number 9 Napa Chevy, here to tell you that when you spend $25 at Napa this month, you'll get a free number 9 Napa racing cap. So whether you're a fan of drivers with fast cars, or just a fan of keeping the sun out of your eyes, you'll get a free number 9 racing cap just for spending $25 at Napa. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores, while supplies last. Offer expires 3/31/18.
If you have hard water, the limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to goodclearwater.com. That's goodclearwater.com.
Introducing McDonald's new $1-$2-$3 menu with breakfast favorites for $1, $2, or $3, like the Sausage McGriddles, Small McCafe Espresso Drinks, the Sausage McMuffin with Egg, and
a new gaming console for my son.
No, but the $1-$2-$3 menu could help you save for one. Wait, isn't your son 5 months old?
Who told you?
I just know these things.
Oh.
Build whatever meal you want with favorites on McDonald's new $1-$2-$3 menu. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
I met someone. You hear it a lot from people on Match, because more people have met their someone on Match than any other dating app. Everyone wants to find that meaningful connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates too. Now here's a free offer for our listeners. Go to match.com/search for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search, view photos, and connect. This free offer is found at match.com/search. That's match.com/search. Match.com/search.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790. KABC.
Now we're back with more Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi, joined today by Jim O'Callaghan. Our guest is James Zirin. He is the author of the book Supremely Partisan. We're talking about the Supreme Court. Perhaps to give some context so we know what we're working from, a very quick thumbnail sketch of the original intent, the original purpose, the original place of the Supreme Court in our government.
Yes, well, interestingly enough, the Constitution itself does not give the Supreme Court the power to declare acts of Congress unconstitutional, although Hamilton and Madison thought they should have that power. Jefferson did not. It's an area where they disagreed.
You mean there was disagreement way back when our founding fathers?
There was certainly disagreement way back then. There was partisanship and there was polarization, and it was vicious. And in fact, in Hamilton's case, it wound up in a duel where he was killed. But there's no reference to the power of the Supreme Court or of the judiciary to declare acts of Congress or acts of the executive unconstitutional. In 1804, Hamilton was killed in a duel. The year before, John Marshall, a pal of his, who was a Federalist, and our fourth Chief Justice, declared that it was for the Judicial Department to say what the law was, and he seized for the judges power, which is awesome, and that is to outlaw the acts of Congress when they conflict with the Constitution, and also to outlaw the acts of the President when they exceed his constitutional authority.
That's pretty good stuff.
That is great stuff.
Don't you think?
That's great stuff.
And so are you saying that the court has always, in one form or another, had some partisanship to it?
Well, first, the framers set up a political process because the president is elected, although he's elected by electors, not directly by the people, but the president is elected and has the power to appoint a justice of the Supreme Court. Presumably, the president will appoint a justice who shares his, maybe one day her, political views. Presidents of the time have been surprised. Eisenhower was surprised by Warren and by Brennan. You have Stevens and Souter appointed by Republican presidents who became liberal justices. The one surprise that went the other way was Byron White, Wizard White, who was appointed by Kennedy and became quite a conservative on the court. But then they have to be confirmed by the Senate. And the Senate, of course, originally was not directly elected by the people in the early 20th century. And there's a constitutional amendment that authorized that. But the Senate used to be owned by the state legislatures. And the Senate was elected by the state legislatures. So the framers breathed a political process into how the judges get there. And in so doing, you have judges who undoubtedly have strong political ties and strong political beliefs.
Well, that's true, but the little stories you've told here, you have many of these justices that you would think would be over here end up being over here throughout the process.
And that's the interesting dynamic that was created with judicial independence, because they're there for life. Only one in history has been impeached. And that was Samuel Chase, who was appointed by George Washington. And what was the reason he was impeached? He wasn't convicted, but they wanted to remove him from office. Why? Because Jefferson thought he was too partisan. So it's dangerous to be partisan. Judges are supposed to be, as you said, nonpartisan and above politics. And largely they are. In most of the cases they decide, they don't vote as a bloc, and they don't conveniently divide as liberals or conservatives. But there is a hardcore of cases where mainly dealing with basic human freedoms where they seem to divide along partisan lines.
You're listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan, and that is our guest, James Zirin, author and attorney. The book we're talking about and the issue is the Supreme Court. The book is supremely partisan. Jim?
I remember a saying from Finley Peter Dunn. He had Mr. Dooley, his saloon keeper, make the statement. Do you remember what that was?
Yes, it's the Supreme Court follows the election returns, and I quote it in my book.
One of the things that is really interesting, I think, is if you look at the way that the Supreme Court has handled economic issues as opposed to personal liberty issues, and I think historically, it's been very conservative and focused on property rights in the area of economic interests. And I think there's a pretty steady strain of conservatism, regardless of who's been on the court in that respect.
Well, there was an evolution toward broad congressional power in the area of economic regulation under the Commerce Clause, which started with Roosevelt. and continued through the 20th century. And there was also a doctrine, which we now call Chevron deference, where the court will defer to administrative agencies and their interpretation of the statutes they're charged with administering. Now we see a trend toward deregulation, toward a war, which Stephen Bannon has said is a war on the administrative state, and you're seeing the courts push back from that. Now, Scalia, for example, was a proponent of Chevron deference. He was a great textualist. Read the statute, read what it says, but if it's ambiguous, defer to the administrative agency that's administering the statute. Gorsuch doesn't agree with that. Gorsuch says you can't take that away from the judiciary. It's their province to interpret the statute, and he wants to take the power away from the administrative agencies. Now, if that's a step toward deregulation, that's going to be a sea change over time in the way we've historically viewed economic regulation.
You know, you mentioned Justice Scalia. I have a very warm story about Justice Scalia. You know, I'm a plaintiff's lawyer. That's what we do. And generally speaking, Justice Scalia was very conservative on issues of ours. Nonetheless, we had a case in the Supreme Court called Semtec versus Lockheed. And we sued Lockheed out here where there was no statute of limitations problem in California. Lockheed is a Maryland company, and they transferred the case to Maryland where there is a statute problem. And we got thrown out. Finally goes to the Supreme Court, and Justice Scalia, who's a big states' rights guy, came down with the decision in our favor that the California law applies and the case is reinstated. And I saw Justice Scalia at an Italian-American lawyer event. He said, Girardi, you plaintiff guys, you don't like me that much, but what did you think of the opinion in Semtec versus Lockheed? I said, Justice, it was awesome. But Justice, one robin doesn't make a spring. And everybody laughs. Then, 3 days later, here at the law firm, in comes this little box, United States Supreme Court. Charlene opens it up. There's a little bird inside, Scalia had sent to us. I mean, what a warm story, you know, about the man.
Well, he was a very warm man, quite delightful. He had a marvelous sense of humor. He was, whether you agreed with him or you disagreed with him, he was fantastic to watch. He made no bones about what his personal views were on certain issues. And while he was for what lawyers call stare decisis, you stand by your decisions, when it came to issues which he thought were decisions were malicious, notably abortion, contraception, and gay rights, he was perfectly happy to overrule decided cases and capital punishment as well, which was another one of his pet issues. We could go into that if you like. But it was interesting during the argument of the gay marriage case in the midst of the oral argument, a man stood up in the courtroom, Supreme Court of the United States, and began to scream and yell. And he was obviously nuts. And the marshals went over to remove him from the courtroom. And they're dragging him out of the courtroom, and he yells at the top of his lungs, "You're all going to roast in hell for this." And Scalia said, "You know, I find that rather refreshing."
You are listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan. That is our guest, author and attorney James Zirin. We're talking about his book, Supremely Partisan, talking about the Supreme Court. We're going to catch our breath at this point as you listen to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi, joined today by Jim O'Callaghan. Our guest is the author of the book, Supremely Partisan, available, by the way, on Amazon. He is James Zirin, and our topic is the Supreme Court. I'm Dave Dino. Boy, have we got a lot in store for you, so stick around as you listen to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Gary Garrison. The White House was placed on lockdown this morning after one or more shots rang out along 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The Secret Service says a gunman was located with a self-inflicted gunshot wound along the north fence line. He has since died. President Trump is in Florida. A 31-year-old probationer was shot and killed by Garden Grove police last night, conducting surveillance at a Santa Ana 7-Eleven parking lot. The suspect was wanted for a no-bail warrant. He was shot multiple times. And a Pasadena police lieutenant has been arrested on federal charges of selling dozens of guns without a license. KABC SoCal weather. A winter weather advisory is in effect until 9 tonight. A 70% chance of showers today. Highs in the mid to upper 50s. More news coming up and continuous coverage at KABC.com. I'm Gary Garrison, Talk Radio 790 KABC News.
Studies show if you sleep next to someone who snores, you could be losing an hour of sleep every night. I'm Trina Webster, and I don't have that problem anymore.
I'm Dan Webster. We're the founders of ZQuiet.
We know how snoring can turn your sweet dreams into a nightmare of shoving, poking, and morning frustration.
Not to mention those dreaded trips to the couch in the middle of the night.
Snoring was a real problem for us.
I tried everything, even surgery, but nothing worked.
That's when we developed an amazing solution called ZQuiet.
ZQuiet is easy to use and works immediately so you can sleep comfortably without making a sound. Just pop it in before you sleep and kick snoring out of bed forever.
Millions of people are sleeping better every night thanks to ZQuiet. So if better sleep is one of your goals, go to GetZQuiet.com.
Get $20 off the regular price when you text BED to 246810 or go to GetZQuiet.com. Text BED to 246810 or go to GetZQuiet.com and get $20 off today.
Hey, what's going on around your house? Need a little help? A second opinion? Well, I'm here to help answer any questions you have about your home. All you have to do is call. Join me, Lou Manfredini, every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on House Smarts Radio, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
We all have issues, so let's start talking.
In Your Right Mind is a new weekly behavioral health show that focuses on issues that pertain to just about everyone.
Join me, Dr. Tanmoy Sharma, and my co-host, Christina Kusner, as we highlight topics that get people talking.
In Your Right Mind is every Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Adam Harmon and Debbie Leroy are KABC's new kids in town, interviewing experts and authors on everything from natural therapies for a better sex life to understanding astrology. It's the Adam Harmon Show, Saturdays at 9 p.m. here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Your one stop for breaking news and adult fun. 790 KABC.
We are the champions. We are the champions.
Welcome back to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi, joined by Jim O'Callaghan and our guest, author and attorney, James Zirin. We're talking about his book, Supremely Partisan. We're talking about the Supreme Court, in government, in our government. It is supremely important for the people to have confidence in their government, to have confidence in the executive that leads the nation, to have confidence in the legislature, and to have confidence in the court. What do you think is necessary for the people to have confidence in the court?
That statement you just made is correct with a certain qualification, and that is that if we don't like the Congress, we can vote them out of office. And if we have no confidence in the president, we can vote him or her out of office. But if we don't have confidence in the court, there's nothing we can do except gripe, because they're there for life. And only one has been impeached in history, and I already alluded to that. So Gallup might be an index of what the public thinks about the Supreme Court. And before the first notably partisan decision, Bush v. Gore, where the court in effect set itself up to select who the president was, the first time in history, hopefully the last time, public confidence in the Supreme Court was in the 60s. Most people had confidence in the court and in the rule of law. Following Bush v. Gore and following other decisions like Hobby Lobby and Citizens United, public confidence in the court, according to Gallup, was around 40-some-odd percent. So it had declined appreciably. And the problem is that the Supreme Court's power derives from the respect and the confidence that the people have in the rule of law and in its decisions. So if in the normal litigation, the kind that Tom handles every day, if I'm a big company and he sues me and he gets a big judgment, I can say, well, you know, maybe the judge wasn't any good. Maybe Tom persuaded the jury in a way that caused them to stampede in his favor and against me. But I can gripe about it, but I accept the decision. Most people accept the disposition. In the case of the Supreme Court, if it's based on a rule of law and on a reasonable interpretation of the Constitution, people will accept it. They may not like it, but they accept it. But if it's based on partisan political views, it has no greater value than the views of Congress, and it's very frustrating to people, and it tends to undermine public confidence.
You know, there's one justice on the court who's voted with the majority 93% of the time.
98%.
98%. Who's that?
That's Anthony Kennedy.
Exactly. How about this, Dave Dino? Hmm. It's a conservative opinion, it's a liberal opinion, whatever. This person has voted with the majority 98% of the time.
Does that make him the swing vote on the court?
Makes him a swinger. He comes from California.
And then the terrible rumor is he wants to maybe retire, huh?
Well, yes. I mean, it's in Washington, people are always rumored to want to retire, but our life's experience is no one likes to retire and no one likes to give up power voluntarily. So I don't know. I like to think Kennedy will be there to stay. Gorsuch was a Kennedy clerk. Maybe he'll wind up being a swinger, too. He'll get educated. But Kennedy, Grassley, who was the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said that he had information that one of the justices was going to retire this summer. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean Kennedy, it could mean Ginsburg, it could mean Breyer, who are both Kennedy's in his 80, Breyer is in his late 70s, Ginsburg is 82. None of them have shown any interest in retirement. I personally think Ruth Bader Ginsburg will have to be on life support before she retires. She'll be there for a long time. But maybe someone will retire, in which case there'll be another vacancy, and we'll see what President Trump does with it, and we'll see. What will be very interesting is if he really goes too far off the mainstream and appoints an ideologue, whether the Senate will go along with it, even the Republican senators, and they'll join with the Democrats in voting him down. And that's happened historically. A number of appointees have failed of Senate confirmation in the last 30, 40 years, and I think this could happen again.
Jim?
You know, one of the things that is interesting, you talk about the confidence in the Supreme Court. If we look back historically, the Supreme Court actually ruled against states that were regulating the 8-hour day. They said states couldn't do that because it violated the freedom of contract. The Supreme Court struck down minimum wage laws. I mean, it's really has not been an institution that supported the rights of, I think, the people at the bottom of the economic scale or system. And so it's maybe what we're seeing with the more recent appointments is really a return of the Supreme Court to the way it used to be, which is really a protector of the greater economic interests in our society.
Yes, well, you know, Roosevelt referred to the forgotten man at the bottom of the economic totem pole. And you referred before to the Lochner era, and which was goes back to a case even before Roosevelt where there was a law regulating the hours that bakers could work in New York. So many of these Supreme Court cases tend to involve bakers. But in any event, and the court decided, the opinion of Justice Peckham, who was one of the last Democratic appointments appointed by Grover Cleveland to be confirmed by an all-Republican Senate. But he said, no, this violates freedom of contract and substantive due process. And as you say, cases like that continued through the New Deal until the switch in time that saved nine, and until there were retirements, and Roosevelt got eventually to appoint nine justices to the Supreme Court. And that changed the complexion of things.
Don't you think, though, the partisanship that takes place in approving someone for the Supreme Court, where the one side is yelling, this guy's the biggest jerk in the world, the other side said, he's the person, et cetera, et cetera. And then that person goes on the Supreme Court. Don't you think all of this partisanship down here tends to change his outlook on things?
Well, you would think. I must say I'd be astonished if Justice Gorsuch has any love for the Democrats as a result of what he's just been through and how they had to change the rules in order to get him in. That may affect his thinking, and it may not. He seems to be a person of very high intellectual qualifications and of great integrity. And the hope is he would be above that. And as lawyers, we all know, we can get into a bitter argument with a lawyer on the other side and the next day go out drinking with him. So there's a certain professionalism about the antagonism that we have as a result of our profession. But just getting back to Lochner, when Chief Justice Roberts in this confirmation hearing said he hated the Lochner era, he thought that's when the court was being perceived as really partisan. He said he promised in the Senate he would be an impartial umpire calling balls and strikes because he didn't want to be a Lochner-type judge. Well, of course, that's hardly been the case. But what's interesting is he did go to the other side, over to the dark side in the Obamacare case, and which was a surprise to everyone. And I think it was really because of his concern for the court as an institution and his concern that he did not want the court to be another Lochner-era court where they were striking down the signature legislation of a new administration.
You are listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan today, brought to you from the offices of Girardi and Keyes. Our guest today is author and attorney James Zirin. I'm Dave Dino. And we still have a lot in store as you listen to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I just saved hundreds of dollars by switching to Geico. I feel like I'm on top of the world.
Disclaimer, you will not be transported to the top of the world. In the unlikely event you find yourself at the Arctic Circle, seek shelter from the elements immediately to avoid frostbite and or hypothermia. Geico will not be responsible if you find yourself in a cave or crevasse with a lonely, abominable snowman, who in all likelihood will force you to play games including but not limited to Go Fish, Charades, Chinese Checkers, or his personal favorite, Red Rover, send Yeti on over. Geico is not liable for any damages, either physical or emotional.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
The Capital One Saver Card presents the invention of the takeout container.
Oh, darling, I've done it. With this folded paper box, we can now easily take out food from a restaurant.
It's genius. So what do you fancy for supper?
I picked last time.
No, I picked last time.
There was a time when takeout was once the next big thing in food. Now it's the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 3% cash back on dining, 2% on groceries, and 1% on all other purchases.
What's in your wallet?
Capital One Bank, USANA.
Feeling great on a regular basis is not just a given anymore. You have to work for it. Adding Quantum Nutrition Lab's Quantum Colostrum to your daily routine supplies you with essential immune support. This power-packed, full-body colostrum concentrate delivers a broad spectrum of multiple immune support agents. Buy two bottles and get the third one free. Call 888-588-7578. That's 888-588-7578. Or visit us online at qnlabs.com. That's QNLABS.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Bob Marshall, PhD, host of Healthline. Tune in to get your questions answered and hear the latest breakthrough information for you and your family. Our product line, Quantum Nutrition Labs, delivers what others only promise, nutrition that really works.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
With our final segment of today's Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi, joined by Jim O'Callaghan. Our guest is the author of the book Supremely Partisan, a book that talks about the Supreme Court. He is James Zirin. We have been talking about the history of the Supreme Court, the makeup of the Supreme Court, some of the factors that may have an influence upon the court. As an author, as a litigator, what would your ideal makeup of the Supreme Court be?
Well, I mean, it's you're asking me what Franklin Roosevelt used to call an awfully iffy question. If I were president of the United States, whom would I appoint to the Supreme Court? I think I would appoint people of great experience, of great qualifications. I don't think I would be unduly concerned with their religion or their ethnicity. I think those are, today, particularly in today's society, those may be bogus tests, despite the political optics of replacing an African-American with an African-American. I think the days of the Jewish seat are over. There was a Catholic seat on the court for many years, and those days are over. Seeing what the present composition of the court is quite obvious that it's over. But politics has to enter into it. If politics didn't enter into it, Merrick Garland would have filled the vacancy created by Scalia, because he was undoubtedly a judge of tremendous qualifications, integrity, intelligence, experience, and competence. But he didn't make it for political reasons. And Gorsuch, who was also shares those qualifications, did make it for political reasons. And I think that's how the composition of the court sorts out.
On the other hand, even though these people have a certain political background to them, I think, for the most part, I think they try to do what the law wants them to do. I don't think they're just saying, okay, I got put in by the conservatives, therefore I want to do this, etc. I think they look at that Constitution, which is not black and white in terms of the rules, and say, okay, what is the best thing here for, don't you think?
Yes. Well, I think what Scalia did was he said, look, we weren't put here because we're moral philosophers, and we weren't put here because our moral standards are higher than anybody else's. And you can't even say they were put there because they're representative of the overall population, the American people, because they're hardly representative, 100% minority. Why were they put there? They were put there because they're lawyers. Now, what do lawyers know how to do? They know how to interpret statutes, interpret language, interpret text. And, of course, there can be varying interpretations, and you can argue about that. But he said he drove them back to say, look, it's the Constitution we're expounding, as John Marshall said, and therefore let's look at what is the language of the Constitution and what was the meaning of the society, the understanding of the society, at the time that this language was enacted and ratified, and then use that as a springboard for decision. Now, another thing you have to look at, obviously, Gorsuch called it the community in which the judge lives. You have to look at the decided cases and figure out what other judges have said about this language and what they thought it meant and how persuasive was their reasoning. And you, in general, you should stand by the decision so that there's some finality and there's a basis for relying on what the law is. There has to be some adherence to what other judges have decided. Then is the question, does there the inquiry stop? And you get someone like Breyer who might say, well, no, one thing you should look at is that's very important is the outcome of the decision. And if all of this sleight of hand is driving you toward a result that's harsh, a result that's unfair, or a result that's not in keeping with where our society is today, then you should reconsider where you're going and maybe come out with a different result. But that's basically the judicial process.
But the philosophical bent of justices is not limited to the philosophical bent of justices on the Supreme Court. The state Supreme Courts have political issues as well, it seems to us. And even the trial courts. You know, I think in Los Angeles, I'm very impressed with how fair those judges are, both those that would be somewhat more conservative and liberal. They're pretty much the center of the fairway. On the other hand, there are issues that come up that politics is not out of the judicial system.
Or general approach. Take the position of a judge in a criminal case. Some judges, because of their background as attorneys, are very sympathetic to criminal defense lawyers and to those accused of crime. Other judges, perhaps had a background in the prosecutor's office, are more pro-government. So they realize that the government has an awesome burden in the criminal case to establish guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. So the government ought to have wide latitude in the kind of evidence it could put in. The defense lawyer might be trying to muddy the waters and confuse things and create a reasonable doubt, and so it's for the judge to rein them in. Now, not all judges agree with that approach. Some judges feel that they should be right down the middle and keep a close rein on both the prosecution and the defense. So I don't know that it necessarily comes out of their politics or their ethnicity. It does come out of their life's experience and their view of the process.
A quick question, because we continue to talk about, and the book is, supremely partisan. So we're talking about partisanship on the Supreme Court. And Tom has rightly taken it down into some of the district courts and even the local courts and shown how it can have an effect all the way through the system. Justice Sotomayor, she said that she cannot help but have her life experience affect to some degree her judicial view. With that in mind, it is one thing to say that someone is politically conservative or liberal. What is the difference between that and saying that a justice is either judicially or constitutionally conservative or liberal?
Well, I think that if you look at Cardozo and the nature of the judicial process, if you look at the writings of Brandeis, the judge inevitably will draw on his or her life experiences as to the degree to which they relate to people.
And how they apply the law.
How they apply the law. Mm-hmm. And Sotomayor has shown in many, many cases that she will apply the law fairly, even to the disadvantage of Latinos. Latino defendants have appeared before her, both as a district judge, a circuit judge, and as a justice of the Supreme Court. So if the law is clear, she will apply the law. She's not going to give anyone a break because they're a Latino. But where the law is ambiguous, and when the case involves affirmative action or immigration or areas where she's had a personal experience that deeply moved her in life, it's clear that she is going to relate that experience to the disposition of the case. Now, others may disagree with that approach, but that's the approach she used.
Tom?
Well, I'll tell you this. Justice Sotomayor is my favorite, and I'll tell you why. You know, over the years, our law firm has purchased original courtroom sketches of major trials. One is the O.J. Simpson jury. One is Madoff being let out in handcuffs after the guilty verdict. All those types of things. And we donated them to the Library of Congress. And indeed, Justice Sotomayor heard about this. And last Thursday, lo and behold, she insisted on coming to the unveiling of the wall of the law firm's gift to the Library of Congress. It'll be open to it's now open to the public, and it's a permanent wall of all these great artist drawings. Clarence Darrow at counsel table when he was accused of bribing a juror, etc. I mean, they're all a bunch of great stories. So she was so wonderful and gracious and kind and so forth on April 27th. It was really terrific to see her.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned about is Justice Sotomayor's background. I can't help but think about Justice Gorsuch's background. His mother, of course, was Ann Gorsuch Burford, who is the head of the EPA and took a tremendous amount of grief, I think it's fair to say, from Congress and from consumer groups and so on. Do you think that that will or has influenced Justice Gorsuch's view of the role of public interest groups, the role of government agencies and so on in his jurisprudence?
Well, we could only speculate. They asked Joe and Lai whether the French Revolution was successful, and he said too early to tell. So I think there's every indication that those life's experiences weigh heavily on the conscience, if you will, of Judge Gorsuch. But is that going to mean he won't give consumers, stockholders, the disadvantaged, the benefit of the law? I think he clearly will give them the benefit of the law, if the law is clear. If the law is not clear, as you look at his dissent in the frozen trucker case, which you're undoubtedly familiar with, he's going to interpret it in a way that perhaps favors the employer and favors the businessman and is opposed to the regulator. And I think that's his basic philosophy.
Don't you think we have to throttle back the partisanship for this country to do great? Don't you think we have to, let's start finding the middle road more? I mean, that was really what this country needs, I think, more than anything. You know, it should be, let's get together, and what is the right thing to do here, et cetera. Don't you think?
I quite agree with you, Tom. And certainly in the period of World War II, we saw a time unparalleled where the country pulled together and was completely united behind the president and the war effort. And we came out of World War II, and there were differences, to be sure, but not the deep polarization in society that we now see. There was great hope that Obama, who had said, you know, there's no red America or blue America, there's the United States of America, would be able to do that. He wasn't able to succeed doing that. And and the outgrowth of that is what we have now, which continues to be a deeply divided country.
You know, there's some opinions that are going to be coming out from the Supreme Court in the near future on gerrymandering, which I think is a really important issue if we're going to get back to some kind of give and take in our political system.
Gerrymandering meaning?
Meaning the way that electoral districts are organized mm-hmm. on a congressional and mm-hmm. legislative basis.
They'll have one district with four guys in it, and then one district with 2 million people in it. And the four guys, they get a vote, and the 2 million people, they get a vote, too.
Any sense of what's going to happen with those opinions?
I think generally they will apply a one-person, one-vote approach because that's what's required by the settled precedents. What's interesting is that you find that if the redistricting benefits the Republicans, the conservative justices will say, well, they've complied with one man, one vote. And if it benefits the Democrats will say it complies with one man, one vote. And the real thing they have to get together on is if there's a partisan redistricting, does that violate the equal protection constitutional standard? But you put your finger on really a key issue as to whether or not we can get the country together again and get some consensus, and this political consensus on where we ought to be going.
Hey, James. This is really nice. You know, we've had some wonderful guests on this show over the years, but it's really nice to sit down, especially as lawyers, to give this a little bit of thought that we probably don't devote too much time and attention to without being inspired like this. I know you're headed back to New York, But it was very, very kind of you to, you know, to go serve with us. I appreciate it very, very much. And this book is real good.
Well, thank you. And it's a marvelous interview. I'm very much honored to be with you, Tom, and with you, Jim, and to be on the show and to share my views with you.
You have been listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan. Our guest today, author and attorney James Zirin. Our topic has been the Supreme Court, its purpose, its history, its makeup, its future. As you can tell, our guest is a cheerleader for the Supreme Court. And as such, he is a champion of justice. Thank you for joining us.
This show furnished by Girardi Keys.